Please silence all electronic devices.
Again, it's not perfect, but, you know, it may be good enough that gets us through this emergency.
I hope you're right. I do have some concerns that, you know, the General Assembly in the last several years has a pretty long record of making laws behind closed doors.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the auxiliary 4th Estate Bunker in northern Wake County, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Glad to have you along. Hope you're continuing to do well from whatever distance you are listening. It is that time of the week yet again to review some of what happened in the world of state politics. Here for our conversation is Becky Gray with the Conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch. Hey.
Hello.
Hi, guys. Starting to miss you and miss being with you in person.
We are going to keep that on recording for our West Coast audience. We are recording this conversation early Friday afternoon. There is what feels to be some growing discord over social distancing and the economic effects of the statewide stay-at-home order, which, reminder, lasts until April 29th. The governor signaled a reopening will happen slowly, likening the transition back to pre-corona life as more of a light dimmer than a switch. Have you seen enough evidence to suggest that a significant easing of restrictions should happen at the end of the month? Rob.
Not seeing it yet. I mean, the last 10 days, we've seen the numbers double. We're up to 6,000 people confirmed positive in the state. We're happy that North Carolina seems to be faring better, at least per capita, than a lot of other states. But that's attributable because we've acted swiftly. And yet we still see these terrifying instances of it just plowing through nursing homes, plowing through prisons and jails. I understand where people are coming from. We're all going a little bit crazy right now, but I think any kind of reopening of society is going to have to be very, very gradual. It's going to be painstaking, a lot of difficult calls in gray areas, but I think we just got to hang in there.
Jeff, to your point, I think that we are seeing some growing discord. There is some unsettlement. You know, every day that this goes by, there are, you know, more and more people are unemployed. The pressure on them to pay their bills and do those things, the pressure on businesses, you know, every day that goes by, there's harm that's being done, and it's going to be harder to recover from it. So I think that there is some discord and some real evidence that we need to move towards opening the economy back up when it's safe to do so. But, you know, this isn't just, everything isn't stagnant with this. We are gathering tremendous amount of information, looking at trends. So I think that, you know, in the next 2 weeks, we're going to have a lot of information available to see how quickly we can do this. And the more data that we have and the more information we have, then the more quickly we can get back to normal.
Some additional policy details trickled out with state lawmakers set to reconvene a week from Tuesday. There is a proposal for bridge loans, $25 million worth, to help small businesses stay open. And also, yes, Medicaid expansion, at least on the House side. Rob, I suspect you do not think that this goes far enough. Becky, do you think that the idea of limited Medicaid expansion, one provision would pay for testing and treatment of uninsured people who contract COVID-19, do you think it goes too far?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we need to start talking about Medicaid expansion at this point. Early on, what we heard from DHHS and others was that the health care and the health services as a result of this would be covered. So I think that we absolutely need to make sure that health care costs are covered for this, for the treatment of the disease. But this is not the time to start talking about expanding an already huge program. That's a discussion for another day, not for now.
Well, I think the reason Speaker Moore has endorsed that idea is because he recognizes that obviously, the public has got to play a role in covering the expense of people who are, you know, in a helpless situation and have contracted this virus. I mean, there's got to be a public role in that. And clearly, Medicaid is a system that we have in place that's primarily federally funded, that's there to do it. It makes perfect sense. Obviously, there'll be some details in working out, but it also does then serve to highlight I think that's probably why some people are worried about it on, from the other side, is what's the difference between some innocent person who's a grocery store clerk and they're working, you know, long hours at the convenience mart, let's say, and they haven't got health insurance and they're dying of, cancer. Those people obviously ought to be covered as well. So it points out the sort of incredible flaw in our system right now. This would be certainly a step in the right direction. I think Speaker Moore, I think deep in his heart, understands that and probably would support a broader Medicaid expansion if he thought he could get it through the Senate.
Well, first of all, I mean, these are things that are being considered. Nothing has been written in stone. Those bills, again, there are lots and lots and lots of recommendations and requests and all kinds of things to the different working group. The health care is one of those, and they are considering lots of changes and options and ways to get through this. I think what we're seeing from the House with these select committee meetings that have been occurring is, what can we do to get through this? It's sort of emergency measures right now to make sure people, the damage that is done to people in the economy and their employment and all is minimized to the extent that we can. The conversation about whether to expand Medicaid and a lot of these other things are absolutely things we should continue to discuss, but this right now, in the middle of a pandemic and trying to make the decisions to make people as whole as we can while we're digging out of this and getting people back to work, which is what is going to solve a lot of these problems. I think those are bigger discussions that we need to have later when we're not in the middle of this crisis.
I just think you'd agree, though, Becky, that if we're going to provide coverage to people who have this illness, it would be a much more logical way to go about doing it is if we could draw down federal money to pay for most of that cost rather than just, say, emptying out the Department of Health and Human Services budget. So I think that's where this is coming from. The idea that Medicaid is a federally funded program, that's probably a more logical place to head than just, you know, depleting the reserves in the state budget.
So sticking with these policy proposals for a moment, just one or two, if you've got a couple top of mind from each of you, a policy proposal that is notable that you've seen getting kicked around for when legislators convene here in a week and a half, or something that's noticeably absent. Becky, you can go ahead first.
Okay. Well, you know, we've talked about a little bit about health care. I think that looking at certificate of need requirements, certificate of need laws in North Carolina, most states have repealed those certificate of need requirements to open up the medical field so that there is more access to care, more quality care, and lower prices. So that's something we have seen. Some of the certificate of need that apply to hospital beds waived during this time, and that's something that I think we need to continue to look at. I think that's a big impediment to the delivery and cost and access to health care that we need to pay attention to. The Education Working Group has also been looking at some things that I think are quite interesting. You know, really looking at, since the kids have been out of school, since we're at the end of the school, looking at some of those standardized tests. And I think this is a discussion that is long overdue. We've had a little bit of it, but I think this gives us an opportunity to really talk about and think about the testing systems that we have. What tests are necessary? How do we test well, but not over-test? And so I think putting some of the waivers to the standardized test is going to be a good test, again, if you will, as to the testing system that we have. And then one other that seems to have kind of been pushed off, but I think should be higher on the list of things that we're talking about and changes making, and that school calendar changes depending on the different school districts. And, you know, what we're seeing is different needs across the state, different counties and cities, municipalities, different areas have been harder hit by this than others. As we try to get back on our feet, I think we really need to look at giving those school systems more flexibility on lots of things. And one glaring one as we move into this.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that last one. That's one, of course, that's been driven in the past by the tourism industry that has told us when we should start our school year. And I think it's long made sense to move away from a system in which we're dictated by that. But the recommendation that really stood out to me, of course, is in the unemployment insurance world. We've got such an overwhelming demand right now, and we know that North Carolina's system is at the bottom of the national pack. So there's been a very creative suggestion that's been it's worked well in other states, it's worked well in other countries. That's the whole idea of work sharing, which is a way of having unemployment insurance go to cover part of a person's wages so that an employer might not have to lay off people. They could actually put everybody on a part-time basis in their workshop, and then, you know, the state would make up the difference in the salary. People could work half-time and maybe still get their full wage. That's the kind of creative solution I hope that the legislators will be considering very seriously week after next.
The legislature is convening on the 28th. We learned this week that beginning next week, it will be closed to the public. This is an exceptionally odd time, but I'm wondering whether you think there should be some access for lobbyists, advocates, citizens, or other groups.
You know, again, these are unprecedented times. The public health concerns are certainly front and center. You know, how do you do this? Is it ideal? Is it as open as we want, as we expect in regular times? No, it's not. But, you know, this seems to be working okay, you know, with the internet, with access to email, with telephone, with the video conferencing, with the webinars, with all of those things. I think that there is a way for the public to engage. It's different, but I think, in these unprecedented times, I think it's certainly worth a shot. And what I've seen, I mean, just from a personal experience of monitoring the committees and being able to interact with legislators, even during the meeting, you know, to send a message of, you know, during the meeting. Again, it's not perfect, but, you know, it may be good enough that gets us through this emergency.
I hope you're right. I do have some concerns that, you know, the General Assembly in the last several years has a pretty long record of making laws behind closed doors, things being drawn up in secret, budgets being put together in secret, not allowing debate, not allowing amendments. At a minimum, I hope that's not the case. Senator Berger, who sort of made this announcement, presides over a Senate in which that's been particularly the case. And indeed, there have not been any public meetings. He says that these things are being handled by, I guess, the oversight committees in the Senate, but we're not really seeing much in the way of senators interacting. We had a proposal from Senate Democrats this morning in which they sent out a list of proposals, but Berger really hasn't said much, so I have a little bit of concern that things are just being drawn up behind closed doors and they're all going to be sprung on us all at once, and I hope that's not the case. I hope that they go the extra mile to allow enough time, to allow a few days between a proposal being unveiled and it actually being considered in a committee, and allowing the public lots of creative ways to have input, virtual testimony, these kinds of things. So I'm hopeful, and I hope to agree with Becky's take on it. I'm a little worried, and I hope I'm wrong.
My understanding of it, just for a little bit of context here, is that in almost likelihood, both chambers will vote to suspend the rules and bypass committee work week after next. So there will not be committees, at least during what we're gathering, will be a short 2 or 3 day session at the end of the April month, and then they will leave, we think, and come back in June. Quick follow-up, just a yes or no, and add a little bit of context if you like. Do they have to come back on April 28th, or could they push this back a month or 5 or 6 or 7 weeks?
No, I think it's time. I think it might have even been time earlier than that. I think there's lots to be done, and I think the public is expecting some leadership and some action from the General Assembly. I think it has both a substantive benefit and a psychological one. I think they need to act.
I think they need to come back, and I think they need to come back when they are planning to come back. One reason why they haven't come back earlier, either the governor hasn't called them back or they haven't called themselves back, is they have been evaluating and looking at the federal stimulus money that's coming into North Carolina, looking at some of the changes that can be made, even things like, you know, extending deadline to get an expired driver's license renewed if it's expired. Those kind of things, looking at what can the governor do, what can an agency do, what does the General Assembly need to do.
Finally, let's just get a silver lining from each of you on this past week, if you have a silver lining to share. Rob?
Well, it's been beautiful here in North Carolina for the most part. I mean, I think that the silver lining is that it really does appear that even though we're having to rely on this 19th century tactic of social distancing, it's working. And I think the overwhelming majority of North Carolinians understand that they need to stick to it. We need to keep with it. It does appear that, you know, we're making progress. We've got a long way to go, and there are still a lot of dark days ahead, but there is reason to believe that we are turning the corner and that there is, at least at the end of the tunnel, some light for a prospect of returning to some version of life, normal life, within the foreseeable future.
Well, the silver lining that I've seen really evolve this week since we talked last week is the ingenuity and the force behind finding solutions quickly. And we've seen Abbott Labs has come out with a new type of testing. You know, there's been a call for testing. If we're going to get past this, if we're going to get to the other side of this and get our economy working again, testing is one of the key things that we have to do. So we've seen Abbott Labs pick up with that. We've seen the Wake Forest Baptist Health facility has developed and coming up and is putting into the field a test for antibodies that, you know, whether or not you have had the virus, whether or not you might be immune to it. So the silver lining for me has really been the innovation and the wave of getting into place, getting to market, responding to this, and doing what needs to be done so that we can responsibly get the economy back, get people back to work. And so many of these problems we've talked about since this began will go away once people are back to work. So that's the goal, and I just, the silver lining for me is the response to making that happen and the innovation that has represented.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director at NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekend.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. We'll be in touch.
As always, appreciate you tuning into the WUNC Politics Podcast and getting an update on some of what happened in the world of state politics. That's each Friday we drop this podcast. You also can hear a portion of our conversations on the radio at 4:50. Next edition of the pod will be out next week. I'm scheduled to have a conversation with the leader of the North Carolina Senate, Republican Phil Berger, on Monday. We'll chat social distancing, the upcoming legislative session, and much more, of course. Hope you will find that as well in your feeds, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. And friendly reminder, you know it by now, hopefully you're listening and downloading. WUNC has a short-run podcast. It's called Tested, and it's all about how the state is responding to the COVID-19 pandemic. So get that wherever you get your on-demand listening. Dave DeWitt has been hosting that. Will Michaels now leading the Tested program with continued help from Dave DeWitt. So give that a listen. It's really good. Again, thanks for being with us. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend. Hope you catch some sun, and we'll talk to you again soon.